So let's see, last Sunday, I sort of started with talking about the first paragraph in Great Master Dogen's Shishogi. And I've since been reflecting more on what more aspects of the Shishogi, and wanted to sort of unpack a thread, I think sort of a main thread that's in there. And I found it quite interesting to realize how clearly Dogen is trying to state it. But I think for those of us who've read the Shishogi, we realize it's so dense. You know, it's got so much teaching in it that what you could find lots and lots of different threads in it. But this is one that I was seeing quite, I thought quite clearly, so I wanted to present this to all of you. I think the thing I've noticed about Dogen is he tends to start off with his comments in a given chapter or a given writing with he kind of goes straight to the heart of it. And then he spends the rest of the chapter trying to explain it, support it, clarify it, and encourage us to kind of practice what he's saying. And so he starts off with that incredible line where he says, "The most important question for all Buddhists is how to understand birth and death completely." Now, in reading through the Shishogi, he's using the phrase birth and death. I think nowadays we can also put in for that. He says the most important question is for, you know, how to understand life. I mean, definitely birth and death, you know, as those two aspects, but he's talking about sort of the beginning point and end point and embracing all of life. And understand, how do we understand life? How can we understand life? What is actually going on in life? Maybe a more popular way of saying that nowadays is, what's the purpose of life? And of course, he's going to tell us what the understanding of life is, or what his understanding of life is from what the Buddhist perspective, and certainly his perspective as a teacher. Now, what's interesting is that you almost have to backtrack. He backtracks after he says that, because he goes on to say that in understanding birth and death completely, and understanding life completely, we find the Buddha within life. We find the Buddha nature within life. We find that fundamental reality in life. So what he's saying is, we don't have to look anywhere else. We can just look and understand our own lives as they are. And within that, we will find what it is we're looking for. I mean, one could spin off from that quite a bit, because I think he was trying to address lots of different understandings that people had during his day and age. We could certainly address a lot of understandings that people have nowadays too, where there's this sense that we need to look somewhere other than life, our mundane daily life, somehow find something else. And he's immediately saying, we don't need to do that. You'll find exactly what you're looking for in the very, you know, nitty-gritty, common, ordinary, everyday life that we all live. Another thing he says is that in understanding birth and death, and understanding life completely, we have the opportunity, or by doing that, to live a full life. So he's saying that in the course of our practice, in the course of what he's going to be talking about, that we can live the fullest life possible. I find it very, very interesting. In the second paragraph, he jumps into, again, he starts presenting his kind of vision of how things are put together, how, his understanding of life is. And he starts in the second paragraph by saying, it is very difficult to be born as a human being and equally difficult to find Buddhism. I don't know that we moderns have much of a concept or an idea, much of a sense of how fortunate we are to have been born human. But of course, this is touching on the Buddhist understanding of the six realms, the six worlds. And we don't need to go into that at the moment. But I think, again, he's trying to present a case to the people he would have been talking to in his day and age, and saying, you're really lucky to be here as human beings. And then he goes on to say, which I think essentially all of us could say one way or another, looking back on it, he talks about how incredibly difficult or fortunate it is that we've come across Buddhism. And I guess I wanted to interject in there too that I think the way our language works and the way our minds work, don't take that to mean that, you know, it's not anyone here at the moment at this meeting, but there are plenty of people out there who have found something else. And that's equally great too. They're not standing against each other. But those of us who've crossed paths with Buddhism, you know, I can remember back in my early 20s when I first came across it, he's saying again, you're very, very fortunate. And then he takes, this is where it starts to get, I think, very interesting in how he's developing things. And this is a theme that I'm going to try to draw out during this whole thing in the Shishogi. He says, because of the good karma that we have accumulated, we have received the exceptional gift of a human body and are able to hear the truths of Buddhism. So he's already talking about good karma that we have accumulated. And good karma factors very, very strongly in what he's going to be presenting from here on out. And so that's the first time he's introduced in this chapter the whole idea of karma, you know, the law of cause and effect, causality, and so on. And I think it's significant that he uses the word accumulated, because that's the way karma works, based on our choices, based on our will and what we do, we accumulate karma. We accrue karma. And I'm saying karma right now because he'll very quickly jump into there's the bad karma too. But if we're talking about karma in general, it's something we can accumulate. I think also too, accumulate brings into it also the bit about, we would sometimes talk about the karma that we have inherited. So that's sort of maybe a subset of the karma we've accumulated. So he's already saying, here we are, we're humans. Because we're humans, we can actually come across this teaching called Buddhism. And he's saying that the reason that's occurred, this wonderful thing has occurred, is because of the accumulation of good karma. And he'll be coming back to this very, very shortly, about the real importance of good karma. Or I guess we could also say, oftentimes we'll talk about merit. Now what's interesting is, again, about when he says the whole question about understanding life, he jumps right in and then talks about, in the next number of paragraphs, he talks about the fundamental reality of life being impermanence. And this is basically the bedrock that all of this is built on, of our understanding of life, according to Dogen. And he talks about how, I find it really fascinating about how he uses the phrase about, we don't want to waste this incredible opportunity of being humans and finding Buddhism. And we also don't want to allow this life of ours to be exposed to impermanence. I mean, impermanence happens, but it's very intriguing that he uses the word being exposed to impermanence. And I think of that as being vulnerable to impermanence. Impermanence happens. Things are always changing. But there's a way of living with it that he's kind of hinting at where we're not vulnerable to it, where we're not exposed to it. And then he develops, he starts off with, you know, we don't want to be exposed to impermanence, but then he develops it a bit further and talks about how when we come face to face with impermanence, when we really realize that that's a fundamental reality of life, we realize that actually there is no one else that can help us. No one else in the sense that can actually change the fact that things are going to change for us. You know, he has this line about it is impossible to look for assistance from kings, statesmen, relatives, servants, wife or children, I'll put in their husband or children, let alone wealth and treasure. I should also put in their partner or children. And then there's this line where he says, the kingdom of death must be entered by oneself alone, with nothing for company but our own good and bad karma. Now, the way he's developed the talking about impermanence, he very definitely is talking about, you know, the kingdom of death, i.e. talking about us going into death as we know it in this world. But I also think that he's also saying, using the kingdom of death, for there have been multiple times in our lives when we've entered the kingdom of death in the sense of something has just changed in our life. Something is never going to be the same. And I mean, I could think of all sorts of very normal examples, like just graduating from high school or graduating from college, university, various relationships that come and go, and so on. But what's really interesting in this is he says that we, when we come to that point of realizing that change is inevitable, he says, all that we have nothing for company but our own good and bad karma. And I think that's just fascinating. He says that's it. That's the only thing that we have there with us when we step forward into that unknown. So I don't know. I think I have a tendency to kind of like repeat myself or keep sort of talking about what I've talked about. But as I see it with Dogen right now, he's saying that impermanence is just a reality of our life, but also good and bad karma is a reality. And it's good and bad karma that actually is more the key to not being vulnerable, not being exposed to impermanence. Now, he spends the next several paragraphs where he's saying that he's trying to say, again, to people during his day and age, but I think equally it applies to certainly those of us in the West, that the law of karma actually is real. It really does operate. And because it operates, be very, very wary of, as he's calling it, bad karma. Be very wary of negative karma. He has this extremely succinct line at the very end of his arguments about trying to present that karma is a reality. He says, let's see if I can unpack it here. He says, it's impossible to escape from karmic consequence if we do evil on the assumption that by not recognizing an act as evil, no bad karma can accrue to us. You know, and you know, I can think back on when I was younger, there were times when, you know, how easily it is, you know you're doing something wrong, you know you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, and you ignore it. mentally, you just sort of turn away from it. And he says that's actually very tragic because there's no escaping the consequences of the acts that we have done, the choices we have made. Now he's still kind of holding all of this within the context of, he says it's because of good karma that we've accumulated that we came across Buddhism. And because we've come across Buddhism, he's going to unfold it, develop it more for us. And part of Buddhism is saying that there's this law of karma and there are bad choices we can make. And there's the next whole section that many of us are familiar with, where he says, and this again is just such a powerful statement, where he says, freedom is gained by the recognition of our past evil acts and contrition therefore. So it's this, I think, you know, as it unfolded for me, I hope it unfolded a little bit more in a little more enlightened way for some of you than it did for me. But there was kind of this growing understanding that, well, actually, I don't want to be making these choices that accumulate this negative karma. And it took me time to start saying, yes, I do these things. I do have these tendencies, and so on. And Dogen is saying, bring those forth, bring those, you know, those to the altar, bring them to the Buddha. Basically state that yes, you have these difficulties with these various things. And it's this section where I drew on the teachings here to make the dedication. And it comes from, and I'll just read the whole thing because it's such a beautiful statement. Dogen is saying, here's the way in which to make an act of perfect contrition. May all the Buddhas and ancestors who have become enlightened have compassion upon us. Free us from the obstacle of suffering which we have inherited from our past existence, and lead us in such a way that we may share the merit that fills the universe. And that right there, I mean, you can just see the beautiful sweep of that. That to me is the whole sweep. That's the whole unfolding of our practice. We've inherited our suffering from the past because of the accumulation of people doing things that they just really weren't aware of and accumulating karma, bad karma, negative karma. And by sharing in the merit that fills the universe, I think what's beautiful about that is that the merit that fills the universe is already there. And that merit is, you know, the sea of compassion, love, and wisdom. And when we, I'm jumping ahead of myself just a tiny bit, but when we start realizing that we wish to actually start acting in ways that are good, produce good karmic effects, produce merit, we're able to do those things actually because we're opening ourselves up to and tying ourselves in with that meritorious, the merit that fills the universe already. We're not actually creating from scratch within ourselves a compassionate act. We're actually opening ourselves to allowing that compassion to actually act through us. You know, and then we have the confession verse, which many of us, again, are very, very familiar with, about all the evil committed by me is caused by beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. All the evil is committed by my body, in my speech, and in my thoughts. I now confess everything wholeheartedly. Greed, hatred, and delusion, you know, what we call the three poisons. And that's sort of, if you look at sort of like a pivot point, when we turn away, it's greed. When we turn the other way, it becomes compassion. When we turn one way, it's hatred or anger. When we turn the other way, it's spiritual love. When we turn away, it becomes delusion or ignorance. When we turn the other way, it becomes wisdom, the unfolding of wisdom. And so Dogen has just spelled out for us basically the turning we need to do, the turning around, the awakening that we need to do. And what immediately follows after that then is talking about, well, it's the whole section on receiving the precepts. The precepts, you know, again, being the, we wish to act, we wish to behave in ways that are meritorious, that are opening us up to the limitless, immeasurable compassion, love, and wisdom of the universe. And we do this through the vehicle of the precepts. Now, I think I wanted to, let's see here, just touch on one more thing here, where right after the receiving of the precepts, he talks about awakening to the mind of the bodhisattva. And what, to my mind, this is touching on is that when we think of bad karma and good karma, when we think of that turning in the direction of good karma, of behaving and acting in good ways, meritorious ways, and so on, I think initially, for many of us, certainly for myself, it's the understanding is usually self-oriented. I'm going to do these meritorious things because it will just make my life better. But the interesting thing is that when we continue to practice the precepts, when we continue to practice compassion, love, and wisdom, we realize that the boundaries between ourselves and others just starts dissolving. It just doesn't, you know, the self can't contain it anymore. It becomes non-selfish, and we realize that actually doing good is sort of limitless, or it's not focused on any one thing in particular. I'm thinking of some of, you know, when those of us who've been down to Shasta Abbey, I'm thinking of like when you go into the bathroom and so on, and they have those kind of basically those little index cards taped up on the wall that have the verses that you can recite. Brushing your teeth, you know, the verse that goes with brushing your teeth, you realize that brushing your teeth is actually helping the entire universe. You're doing something that is good. It's good to keep your teeth clean. And that's, you know, that's a fairly, what, modest example, but I think this is what Dogen is really pointing to in how deeply things open up when we turn away from our actions that create bad karma and turn towards the following of the precepts and so on. So he talks about awakening to the mind of the bodhisattva, a sattva being a being, and was having to remember what exactly bodhisattva means, but a being who is an enlightening being, somebody who is practicing and working towards the unfolding of enlightenment, of unfolding towards the opening up to the merit that fills the universe. And just very, very briefly, Dogen talks about the four wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy, are the means we have of helping others and represent the bodhisattva's aspirations. And then he says, charity is the opposite of covetousness. You know, the first of the four wisdoms. Charity is the opposite of greed. In other words, he's talking about charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy as just a slightly different way of approaching compassion, love, and wisdom. He's talking about it as this is the turning away from greed, anger, and delusion and towards compassion, love, and wisdom. So again, it's in Dogen's own words, it's in his kind of his own understanding and putting it together in a way that really fits his time and his thinking. But I'm hoping what I'm presenting here is showing that actually it's directly related to what Shakyamuni Buddha was talking about. And it's, you know, we could go what I think Reverend Master Jiyu was fine talking about Shakyamuni Buddha and Dogen and many, many others, and talking about what how they are all saying the same thing. I think just touching briefly on the very last bit of the Shishogi about putting the teachings into practice and showing gratitude. And putting the teachings into practice is that he's saying that, okay, I've made my case, I've presented the information about how Buddhists understand birth and death, how we understand life, and how we need to work with it. So we need to get on with putting that into practice. And as we put it into practice, as we accept the negative karma we have accrued from the past and bear that, as we continue to put the precepts into practice, as we continue to practice charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy, there actually is a joining, an opening up to an experiencing of the merit that fills the universe. You know, in bits and pieces, in little fits and starts, perhaps, but ultimately, when we stick our toe into that massive river that's flowing of compassion, love, and wisdom, the only thing that we can kind of really say or describe that comes up is just this incredible gratitude. Gratitude for how reality, how life really is. Let me just read this one final section here, which is one way Dogen has of describing this gratitude. He says, all things, earth, trees, wooden posts, bricks, stones, become Buddhas once this refuge is taken. From these precepts come forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment when the flames are fanned by the Buddha's influence. This is the merit of non-action and non-seeking, the awakening to true wisdom. Just one of many ways he's described just kind of the indescribability of that gratitude, of that experiencing, of that compassion, love, and wisdom that is fundamentally there. So I guess the one question that comes to mind is, have I made it, at least sort of in outline form, somewhat clear as to what Dogen is presenting as what the understanding of life is? And I think subsequently, the understanding of life, once we understand what life is, our understanding of what we need to do. So I think I will leave it at that for now.